some things you can't teach, and that's what we're here about, talking about the gifts that God has given us. Mine happens to be humor. I didn't ask for it. I just woke up funny. And being funny has been serious with me. I've had more fun than my share most of my life. Humor, as those of you who've been attending the seminars yesterday and today have hopefully been discovering, is not just a way to be funny, but a way to notice, a way to interpret. It's how you make something come alive so you can smell roses in the winter. Calls on memory, calls on imagination, calls on us to take seriously the God-given gift to imagine. Let your mind go barefoot. Let it wiggle its toes occasionally and say, that felt good. My mind goes wandering frequently, and I have a lot of fun playing around in the Bible. I have one interesting insight that's come to me recently that I want to share with you tonight around the avenue of Christian fellowship, which is the title I'm given, and honestly, I'm not going to try to hang a sugar stick on it. I've been thinking about this. Christian fellowship, they're trying to have some in Dallas this week. Gosh, I hope they do. You know, be the first time in the Southern Baptist Convention we ever did. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't it be a good thing if the newspapers could just say, instead of how big our budget was, how much we loved one another and proved it in public? Wouldn't that be nice? My life's been buried in the institution most of my life. I was licensed to preach when I was 13 years old. According to Texas law and Baptist custom, that are generally synonymous, I could legally perform weddings in the eighth grade. I was always laying on hands. Just let me bless your life, my child. I was terribly popular. Everybody wanted a double date with me. I was the local good guy. But I grew up in the church from that point on. Didn't always want to. But it was always easy to do because I could say, well, I was licensed to preach the gospel. Grew up in the youth revival movement in Texas, and I still dress like it. This is my evangelistic funeral suit. It's what I bear evangelists in. You know, so. And some of them could use it, and others doing okay. You know, but I will choose who goes. But I've grown up with a healthy regard for the institution. For a long time, I swallowed it hook, line, and sinker, like many of you. For a long time, I punted it, like many of you, usually on first down. Throw me the institution, I didn't even want to run with it. I'd just kick it and laugh at it. Used to do, like many of you, call Nashville the Vatican. And some good things began to happen to me through institutions. I began to realize if it hadn't been for the church, where would I be? If it hadn't been for some folks cranking out literature for me to give parts about, where would I be? If it hadn't been for some preachers that were so narrow-minded they could go through a keyhole and leave room for you, where would I be? I've spouted more stuff somebody else told me was true because the institution thought it'd be nice than anybody in this room. And I love the church. I guess one of the best friends the church has ever had. I don't swallow everything. Neither do I barf it all. And I think it's in that context that I want to talk to you about some things I've been noticing. My main insight that I want to try to share with you tonight grows out of the fact that I noticed that Jesus never did go to the Bible to find his illustrations much. He made them up. And so I have a precedent. But I do want to go to the Bible for this one. He made this up. One day they were questioning him beside the Sea of Galilee. What are you up to? You don't ever quote Moses. And he'd grin and say, right. You know. He was an authority. He didn't quote an authority. It's a little different. So they kept pushing him. So finally somebody says to him, what are you up to anyhow? We never heard anybody talk like you. You're weird. And he grinned. Did that a lot. had to with the kind of people he had to deal with, you know. It's like the guy in a serious discussion at First Baptist Church in Waco, Texas, several years ago. Dr. Royal McLean was leading a discussion group on current-day moral dilemmas of youth. And most of them were there. And I knew most of them personally. But they were talking about moral dilemmas, and there was a group, sort of a pie-shaped wedge crew right in front of McLean, and they were sort of going at the free love, open morality kind of business. Sort of flip a coin and get a date kind of stuff, you know. And they're going at this on the front triangle right up here. And there's one guy right over here keeps leaning and stretching. Trying to get his question in edgeways, you know. Finally got so tired he's holding it up. After 20 minutes of pie-shaping it right through here, this guy finally just... And so McLean would try to get to him, and somebody else said, "But don't you think?" And he'd say, "Well, yes, but..." And they'd say, "But don't you think?" And he'd say, "Well, right." And finally said, "Ah!" So McLean turned to him and said, "Yes." And he said, "Dr. McLean, what kind of filing system do you use?" Always one of those kind of people in a discussion group. You're just honing in on the crucial, and he goes, "Chill." You know, they did that in his groups frequently. You can't be accountable for everybody in the multitude when you don't charge admission. So somebody stirs this up, and he responds by telling one of my favorite parables. Just made this up right there. He didn't read this in Amos. Spotted a farmer at work in the field. He said, "See the farmer?" And they all said, "Yeah." You can hear a multitude turn to look. And we don't know how large the multitude is. That's kind of important. He never reported on his multitudes. Just, you know. They'll have some dude in Dallas staying up till Thursday noon with an adding machine figuring out who was there. You know. He just said, "Oh, it's just a multitude. Oh, Lord, just a multitude." So there he is, and they gathered around. And... So he says to the multitude, "See the farmer?" They did. And he says, "Well, what I'm up to is like the farmer at work in his field." And he told the parable of the farmer sowing seed. Some falls into the hard dirt, some into the shallow dirt, some into the thorny dirt, and some into the good stuff. I want to relate that to the BSU. Can I do that? I may not be too nice to some of you, but I might even rewrite one verse tonight. "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you uncomfortable." I've spent a lot of time in BSU groups for 15 years. I've been on big, important campuses. I've been on little, important campuses. I've been on retreats. I've been in drawing room banquets. I've been at installation dinners for the new officers. I've been at Ridgecrest and Glorieta. I've blessed America. Though much of America, it doesn't know it yet. But in all honesty, I've noticed the whole deep, deep well of Christian fellowship hardly plunged in much of what we're trying to do in some of our groups. Please hear me as your friend. I'm not knocking it. I'm trying to be as honest as I can be. Because I think if you come up here and spend a whole week and just hear us tell you how nice you are and how good it was that you came and how many of you were here, and then go back and try to use that on your campus, you're going to flop for 1st of October. And if we're really honest about what we're up to, we've got to deal with some of these dirts down at your place. Now, let me first of all explain a Palestinian farm. I don't know that a Palestinian farmer could do it, but I'll try. People lived in villages surrounded by walls. They got their walls from stones lying on top of and buried deep in the fields they plowed in, which they grew wheat and stuff to live on. Is that clear? I can't repeat it. I'll tell you that. They took the stones, stacked them up, and built walls. Notice this one. This is out of an archaeology book. I guess it's true. They wouldn't lie. Um, The walls around Jericho were thick enough at the base and tapered at the top until when they were finished off, you could still drive three chariots abreast all the way around the city at top speed. They got those stones out of the fields. Now, how would you like to be an ox plowing that? You tell me. Boy, your yoke better be easy because your burden isn't light. I'll tell you that. It's where they invented foam rubber was for the yokes of the oxen in Palestine. And these dudes get out, you know, and they strap on these oxes. Not again today. Oh, come on. Let's go plow some water. That's killing me. You know, it's... But they take the stones and they build... Then inside, just like in a fort out here in Kentucky at Harrodsburg or somewhere, they take the big walls and build them. And then on the inside, they build houses using the wall of the village as one wall, three walls here, thatch it, and you've got a place to live. Then you proliferate that inside. Then you go out through a gate, different directions, and farm outside the village and hustle in for protection if marauding troops pass. Now, if you got up on the wall of the village and looked down, you would see the patchwork quilt that you frequently see in farming country from an airplane of the different fields laid out neatly, all spread out before you. And that's what you see. They, you know, dig all this up, plow it, plant it, and they don't waste any of it. It's hard to come by. Floor space for a room this size might have to feed 12 families for a year on the grain they could grow. And they didn't go into it with one of those long-handled Kansas-type scythes hacking away. They went in with little short-bladed deals like a paring knife and nipped it off and put it in their pouches. Boy, you don't hack on it when it's precious, you nip it. Now, that's what they're doing. Tough ground, hard to come by, stones have to be hauled out every year, villages are built out of them. And they know what he's talking about when he says different kinds of dirt in the field. Another thing is, because it's hard to come by, they don't want to divide it with walls and fences. Instead, they divide it with little footpaths. And you simply leave a little footpath. And from up here, if you look down, it looks like a checkerboard operation where people trust each other not to lean over and nip a little when nobody's looking. Takes trust. Now, Jesus says a farmer goes into a prepared field and he sows his seed broadcast style. Now, he's been saving it in a mason jar with freezer tape on it. Says, seed corn, don't make bread with it, Martha, and puts it on the shelf. So Ezra's out just, you know, scattering it around. Some of the seed, it says, falls in the little hard footpath. And I've known some BSU groups like the little hard footpath. You can't get the seed in them with a Black and Decker drill. It can be for many reasons. Sometimes we get so hidebound to what we've always thought is right. We do what's always been done because it worked four times back. So we don't dare tamper with a going good thing. The only plants I've ever known that didn't grow were either already dead or plastic. And I'd rather be doing something than stumping. A lot of your groups are this way, and I've seen you on your campuses, and I've been brought there by you to do some stuff. Try to bless America from your pedestal. And America says, oh. Some of you wouldn't know a new idea if you had it. Isn't that a shame? How we can get poured in concrete when we should have been sketched in dust? The life that's open to the mystery of God that really calls forth our best is a life that's not nailed down to something, but something that's moving, flexible. How'd you like to be one of those Israelites following the pillar of fire by night and the cloud by day, huh? How'd you like to do that for 40 years in a patch of ground about the size of Black Mountain? Blow your mind, wouldn't it? You just keep crisscrossing back and forth. Martha's nagging at him all the way. I saw that rock yesterday, Ezra. Don't care, we follow that cloud. And just about the time you get the tent nailed down, she says, it's moving. That'd drive me crazy. But for those of you that have a tendency to like it like it's always been and terrified of what it might become, I would like to say the Bible started in a garden and finished in a city, and God thought up change, and if you're not part of it, you're going to miss it. Some of you still electing officers that we don't even need anymore because they were doing it when BSU was thought up. Thank God. You're helping us. Isn't that crucial? Still going through rituals that don't mean anything. Ritual is the death of growth. Young couple got married, wife's baking a ham. Husband walks in, she's cut both ends off of it, and these two delicious-looking hunks of ham are lying on the countertop while she cuts X's in it, stabs it with cloves, and smears mustard on it. He says, "What are you doing?" She says, "Baking a ham, my dearest one." They've been married 2-3 weeks. He says, "Well, why are you cutting the ham off on the ends like this? That looks like good stuff." She said, "Trust me. I learned to bake ham from my mother, who's world's champion all-time ham baker, and you had never had ham till you have eaten this kind of ham. It was delicious. Best ham he ever had in his life. He marched around it like a maypole. Yay, ham. It was super." Called out the window, "We've got ham." You know, just delighted. Goes home for Thanksgiving, talks to his mother-in-law, gets her off to the side, and he says, "Listen, this may sound silly, but I want to ask." She said, "What?" He said, "Sally Sue," and explained the ham. Cut this. She says, "Well, I learned that from my mother." He said, "Well, I'll be darned." She said, "Oh, and she really was the best ham fixer. I'm just a poor imitation. She could do ham." Christmas, he runs into Grandma. "Listen." This is going to sound silly, but, Mildred and Sally Sue both, say that you started to... She said, "I had a short pan." And there are a lot of groups today still lopping ham ends off because Grandma had a short pan. A lot of them. And it happens in your group, and it happens in your church, it happens in my church. Anytime we get hung up on what has to be instead of what could be, we limit what God might love to do. Now, would you please hear that with affection? I'm not mad at people that like what they do. I like what I do. But I want to be fluid. I want to be open. I'd like to be ready to sail on the next breeze instead of tying my kite down saying, "Wasn't that a good trip?" Walt Kelly says, and he says it right, "Too soon we breast the tape, track language. And too late we realize the real joy was in the running." Grow some. Try something. Do something a little different. Don't think just because you brought guitars into BSU Center and moved the ping pong table out that you're now liberal. Okay? Hard dirt. If I were going to apply that to the personal life, I'd say that there's a surprise there. A lot of us think it's a village reprobate. Might be. But did you ever see anybody that got so busy doing good stuff he didn't have time to be receptive to God? I see a lot of people do that in the BSU. BSU is the busiest little beehive. What are y'all doing over there? I don't know. Wasn't it wonderful that we were together? 2:30 Tuesday afternoon, there we are. Please come. Where are you going? Over the... Frantic doesn't mean deep. And I think in your personal life, you can get so caught up doing everything else that you really miss it. Don't let that happen. Don't be like hard dirt. Don't get packed down. Don't get so unchangeable that you can't be ready to be open to God. I'd say that's one lesson I've learned from visiting among some of you. Second lesson, shallow dirt. Drop a little seed in, plink, goes, Here it is, look at this seed, son of a gun. That's 2 inches taller than any other seed out here. Look at that dude go. Woo, go seed, hit it. The seed's just, "Thank you very much." Now, this is really shallow dirt, very good dirt, super dirt. If you're grading it with a clipboard, that's A dirt, you know. It's on solid rock. One of those ox just hate it, you know. Seed hits it. Ping. Then there comes a day in the seed's life that comes to every seed, root putting down time. Somewhere out in seeddom, there's a little trumpet. All the little seeds go. Second little trumpet. You know. Now this little seed heard it, man. He's ready. And then. And it'll happen to you. It'll happen to you. A lot of us get so busy dipping around up here in this little rinky-dink bunch of stuff on the surface, we don't ever get down in the deep roots. Would it surprise you to find that the prayer of Jesus on the cross, "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit," was prayed by every little, tiny, diaper-wearing Hebrew child before he went to bed at night? The equivalent of, "Now lay me down to sleep, pray, Lord, my soul keep, fast, die before awake." What would you think if a guy was led out to be executed? God forbid that that ever happens again. But wouldn't it be something if you led him out to execute him and he stood there and they said, "You have any last words?" "Yes. Now lay me down to sleep, pray, Lord, and so." Everybody in the group be peeking, you know. A child's prayer. But isn't it interesting that, "Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit," becomes a whole new thing because he didn't quit growing. And on the cross, when they hung him up to dry, it was the backbone of his deepest moment of testing. You need some deep roots because crisis will come. And I think it's that little surface runaround. A lot of us going through their motions that'll kill you. There are a lot of people that have got in lingo. In other words, you can't belong to our group if you don't talk like us. I think many BSUs ought to give out a glossary of terms. So we'd know whether or not we wanted to be part of this group. And I go to one BSU group and it's, we want to discuss something deep, man. You know, that's a caricature. On the other side, it's holy, holy, holy. You know. And I keep saying to myself, you know, where are the roots? What's going to happen to this crew when the chips are down? What's going to happen to this guy, that girl, that couple, this leader? I really think we've got to deal with deeper stuff sometimes. A lot of us come together and argue about surface stuff and go home. Or come hug each other because it's so wonderful that we were all here to hug and then leave. What'd you do tonight? Oh, hugged one another and left. It's just wonderful. That's the stuff that just eats away at the church. Stuff that eats away at what you're up to. Ever hear a sermon you didn't listen to? Ever pray a prayer you didn't mean? People like that are going to follow for almost anything. You kind of find what's going and then hook on to it and let them pull you anywhere it's headed. And you really need to be cautious about this. One of my favorite characters, if I can make a parable for a moment, is Chicken Little. Gospel according to Chicken Little. Chicken Little's walking through the woods one day, Acorn right in the head. He goes scalding off down the trail. The sky is falling. Anytime you do that, you get a bunch of weirdos will chase you anywhere. They just fall out of trees with names like Ducky Lucky, Goosey Woosey. And here comes this whole mad congregation chasing down the trail in unison. Sky is falling, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. And they run up on Foxy Woxy. I like Foxy Woxy. Every BSU needs one. Foxy Woxy's standing in the trail and they come charging up all out of breath. Sky's falling, sky's falling. Let's go, man. Move, move. He says, "Hold it, hold it. I ain't got time to hold it. Just a minute. What do you mean the sky's falling? It hit me right there. See the knot?" He said, "Well, I see the knot, Chicken Little. But where is the piece of sky that hit you? Where is the piece of sky that hit you?" "Well, you don't stay to check when the sky's falling, man. You move." "And you expect me to believe the sky? Where's the hole?" He says, "Where's the hole?" Well, it's over on the other side of that tree. I don't see it. Well, you just take my word for it. No, can't do that, Chicken Little. Let's go see the piece of sky that hit you, and then I'll follow you, hmm? I'm not going back over under the skyfall, buddy. Not this chicken. I don't believe you, Chicken Little. Let's go see. All right, out. Come on. Boom, 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 boom. And it's an acorn. Golly. I'll tell you what. I wish we could turn loose a whole herd of foxy woxies on simpletons. I am so sick and tired of people that gallop around slapping tracks and plastering stickers on everything, yelling, "Sky's falling!" and getting nothing but weirdos that'll follow them anywhere they go. It's eating us alive. Eating us alive. People say, be filled with the Spirit. Wouldn't it be nice? One man made it. Only one, and we killed him. You don't get filled with it. The tendency is if you think you are, you think everybody else isn't. And you become a yardstick for everybody else's faith. And you just lay down and say, ha ha, you're short. The most intolerant people I know are spirit-filled. I'll just put it on the line. If you're all that sensitive to what God's up to, why aren't you as patient with sinners as He is? Hmm? A lot of our groups just sitting around waiting on something warm to percolate instead of getting busy hugging some hurt. And I've about had it right to here with Chicken Littles in the BSU. And I hope you have. Shove them back to the acorn. Push them right back under. No hole in the sky. And say, now, what do you call that, Chicken Little? The truth shall make you uncomfortable. You better know it before you blow it. I don't think I can be much plainer, do you? If you have ears to hear, He said it in the Bible, listen. Don't be superficial. Don't charge around with the truth. Clobbering everybody that doesn't agree with you. If you're really sensitive to His Spirit, you'll be more like Him and not like Pharisees. He had less use for them than anybody. Number three, thorns and weeds. A little seed falls over in there, plink. Starts to grow. He's up in his adolescence. About ready to leave home for that great harvest in the sky. One night the chief weed calls a meeting. It's about midnight because the seeds always go to sleep about 11:30. I'll tell you how to get rid of crabgrass. Try to grow it. It'll kill it. I ain't heard that myself. Anyhow, what you got is a little seed growing among the thorns, and the chief weed calls a meeting. He says, all right, you guys. In the morning at dawn, we get it. You hear an old thorn around here on the boulder. Can hardly wait, man, sharpening his thorns. And at dawn the next morning, old Ezra sits up in the sack. Martha says, what was that? He said, I thought I heard a seed scream. Now, that'll get you. I hit on it just a moment ago, but I think one of the biggest problems I've ever run into with the BSU was that we tended to be the kind of group, when I was in school at least, that drew a circle around us and sang the famous hymn of Baptist. One door and only one, yet the sides are two, we're on the inside. Pussycat, pussycat, where have you been?
I've been to London to see the Queen.
Pussycat, pussycat, what'd you do there?
I frightened a mouse under her chair.
A chance to see the Queen, and he spent his trip chasing mice. And it'll eat your BSU alive. A lot of you get to heaven, your crown's going to look like Mickey Mouse hats. That's true. If your faith is any measure of what you think is crucial, you'll have ears that big and a mouth like that. Isn't it terrible? You know, they've been whole denominations started over whether or not to have a piano in church. And there have been whole churches started over which side to put it on. Don't you know it matters to God?
Please put it on the right. On the right.
Things we think are crucial that he must chuckle at. If he doesn't have a sense of humor, we're all in trouble. But what we do is we run through and we thread a verse here, thread a verse there, here a verse, there a verse, everywhere a verse. E-I-E-I, amen. Tire not and wear it like a badge, and if you don't agree with this, you going to hell. Wait, I didn't know I was mocking his pastor. I didn't mean to do that. But haven't you heard that kind of stuff? Haven't you heard it? I'll tell you what, we had a BSU executive council meeting when I was a junior. I was on the council. Social chairman, naturally. I wasn't spiritual enough to move up yet. So, we're electing officers for next year, and those of us that are already holy get to nominate the next round. So we're nominating the new inductees, right? So we get to nominate two for each position. And we were nominating candidates for president. And I remember when we were talking about two people that were nominated, one of the men in the group bit his lip and bit his lip and bit his lip and bit his lip because he just hated to speak up about this one particular person. Campus leader, vital kind of guy, super soul. And finally, this good brother spoke up and he said, well, I just feel like I must share this. Never seen it, but I've heard. Watch out for people like that. That so-and-so occasionally smokes a pipe. And we all go, broke my heart. Now laugh at it. Because I tell you, there's some people puff pipes that just love God a whole lot. See, what we want to do is line up all the stuff we agree with and then measure you with it. Watch that. It's called living in the rinky-dink, living in the Mickey Mouse, living in the nitpick. Frighten a mouse under her chair. Big deal. Make a whole trip to scare a mouse. Bet that mouse is sitting out there chuckling at the travel agency. Third one is full of thorns. Fourth one is good dirt, and I don't think I have to elaborate on that. This one is the arena of good Christian fellowship. It's rich, it's fertile, it's loamy. Put one seed in, you get 100 back. It's busy doing the right stuff. It's up to what it was meant to do. It was doing its gift. So what are you doing? Oh, just being dirt. Go seeds, go seeds. Let's get out of here, you know. You'd be proud of this dirt. Proud to be identified with this dirt. But the tragedy is that the parable far too often gets interpreted just like that. We try to categorize. We've got neat little compartments like an egg carton where we put this egg, that egg, and that egg. And over here's the kind of BSU that does this. And over here, kind of BSU that does that. And I've been doing the very thing we're most guilty of. Putting you in a slot. Making fun of what's wrong with you so I can look awful good with what's right about me. It's called a ministerial sting. You see, what happens is, your tendency is to close the parable with the good dirt and say, I know the hard, indifferent dudes. I know the kind that just go through the motions and don't have any real deep roots. I know the kind that live in the nitpicky and chase mice under queen's chairs, and then there's me. The secret to the parable is one of the most beautiful secrets in all the Bible. All four dirts are in the same field. It blows my mind. It really does. Because within the operation of what you're up to in a Christian fellowship on your campus, if you're really honest, there are some people so hidebound to tradition they couldn't get out of it if they had to. There's some people that are just so superficial all they can do is spite simpletons. Some people that are just living in stuff it really doesn't matter, down in the footnotes going, how wonderful. And then there's some that are deep and solid and firm and productive. Within what's happening to you, within what's happening in the church, on this grounds, in a marriage, in a family, in a business, on a campus, the incredible thing is that there is a blend of many responses. The other part of that is in your life there's a blend of many responses. I think what's happened at a conference like this for years, we've tried to get people here for 7 days and change your life for the rest of it. So that you will never, ever be the same because you found Ridgecrest. Just like God couldn't find you if you were in Tupelo, Mississippi. We try to get you here, and we try to change your life. We try to be overwhelming with insight, and you go out of here just saying, I'm different. You go home, your folks says, I don't believe I've met you. And then you've got the syndrome of the group that gets up here and stays in a lodge over here at one of the Virginia cabins, and they just have the greatest time, and at night they're sharing. They're just wonderful. And two old guys that just hated each other now love each other. And they hug when the week's over and ride home together on the same bus, buy each other room together at college next year. And, and that's beautiful. But it was the greatest week of our lives till next Thursday. And then you punt on first down again. See, life is a syndrome of many, many kinds of responses. It'll happen in your life. Your campus group will get here and just go back ready to change state university. What you hope to do is get enough insight to make another move. Not enough insight to conquer the world. And you'll do it a little at a time. You'll grow and you'll move. The best gift you have to take back, though, is to take all of the blend of abilities, talents, depths of devotion, distance of outreach at one time, and say a fellowship of Christian people is not an arena of the perfect. It's a bunch of strugglers, beggars all hunting for bread, people that are willing to care for each other and for people outside their group. One church I know in particular had a group of college young people coming on Sunday mornings about 9 or 9:30 for a worship service. One Sunday morning, a beautiful day, large attendance. One girl was turned away from the service by a deacon of the church because she came in blue jeans and a sweatshirt, and that was about it. And he thought she was not properly attired for worship. And I could puke. We get so all fired up tight about who we let in, we're not going to help many folks. So let your fellowship be one that really cares, has many gifts and many talents, so that the Christian faith gets played on the basketball court, in the biology lab, and in the dormitory, your way. I want to get David Meese and George Gugliardi to help me do something. George, get over to this piano, would you please? They don't even know they're going to do this. David, would you come here? And somebody tell them the hymn number for Amazing Grace. It's 188. Okay. George, would you find 188 in your hymn book? You do read music, as I recall. Sort of. It's 188, David. And I'm going to ask each of them to do something for us, and we're about to hear a parable of Christian fellowship. Would you listen? Watch this. Oh, I love that. And Jesus came preaching, and they said, "You don't follow the notes. You take liberties, and you heal on the Sabbath." And he said, "Dipsy doodle." Unto thee. The sickest perspective on the Christian faith you can have is that every man has got to sit at that keyboard and sound the same on Amazing Grace. The sickest you will ever be is when you feel that way. You will grow. You will be enriched. You'll find new dimensions to all that's around you. If you let old George dipsy doodle, and if you let David tack chord it. It is called Christian fellowship. Your gift plus my gift plus his gift equals the church. And let us pray. Oh God, I don't understand the truth. I just stand and marvel at it sometimes. And occasionally I'm passed by a person on the street wearing a familiar fragrance and I know it, but I can't name it. And truth is that way. It is uncomfortable to stand and look in the mirror of how you see us and have to admit some of the places we really come up short. Forgive us for feeling that we're the center of the universe. Teach us that when Baptists get to heaven, we're going to have to spend some time together getting over the shock of who else made it and who else didn't. And teach us to lock arms with our brothers, red and yellow, black and white and brown, Episcopalian, Methodist, Catholic and Lutheran, and do our best to love each other so much that the world will know we've been with you and they'll want to come in. Let us learn to hug before we reach out. And let us reach out because you love us all just like we are with all of your heart. In the name of Jesus Christ, our Lord, and the reason for our fellowship, we pray. Amen.